Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Morning. This is Dr. Danita Applewhite, and I am so glad to be here this morning. I made a choice. I made a choice, and I hope you do too, that every morning when you get up, look at what you have already accomplished, pat yourself on your back, and look forward to the present moment that you're into at this very, very moment. Look at the present moment, because that's all you truly have any type of control over, so that you can impact your future. Okay? So that's what I did this morning. That's what I do every morning. And I encourage all of my students out there and the teachers and all of the people that listen to the show that have not yet acknowledged that they are a student and a teacher. Okay? But let me explain something to you. The Student to Teacher radio show, sponsored by White Apple Institute, is about helping people to recognize that the student is one who is willing to learn. And I'm sure that all of us can associate with that. Willing to learn. Not necessarily academics, but life lessons. Then the teacher is one who is willing to share those life lessons that are learned. Hence, that is student to teacher, and we are all at one time in our lives interchangeably students and teachers. We go through our whole lives like that, don't you agree? So today, what our students and teachers from all over the world, because this show is broadcast globally and we get mail, email messages in and chats. By the way, the chat line is open. Okay, so if any of you don't want to get on the actual live call this morning, make sure you go into the chat and give us any comments or suggestions that you'd like to share with the audience out there. But today is, of course, all of our shows are special, have a lot of great information in them because of the people like yourselves who call in or write in to White Apple Institute and let us know how you enjoy the Student to Teacher radio show, and we appreciate that. But today we wanted to focus on something that's been coming up a lot, and I think that when I look at over the years, the semesters that I've taught, it seems that always towards testing time, we get more students in that are talking about the anxiety of testing, having a terrible time with testing or reading, and we find out that there's some other issues going on with them and even identify sometimes a learning disability. Now, this is a difficult subject for many, many people, and I have an example for you to really look at this morning, because one of the students wrote a very intense letter of explanation about how she feels about her learning disability. And I don't think that it has a lot to do with her ethnicity necessarily, but because she's an African American woman who is dealing with fibromyalgia and dyslexia, she is also trying to deal with the emotional aspect of explaining her so-called dis in her ability to an employer or to the teachers at the college that she attends. So I'd like to really get into talking about Miss C, I'll call her, okay? And Miss C has a real challenge with, first off, even understanding what a learning disability is. And I can tell you, I'm going to get into that in a minute, but I can tell you that this is such a widespread problem that we're finding that, and this is statistics now, that over 25% of the dropout rate with adult learners in college is associated, of course, with financial and you know, family pressures and all of that, but that there's also usually some type of hidden learning disability, some challenge with the academic coursework, and they don't want to talk about it because of whatever taboos that they've been experiencing in their past, in their childhood, or what they've heard about in society about admitting to something about that you have a learning disability. And part of that is because most people are not clear on what a learning disability is. You see, and it goes back to many of our medical doctors and our psychologists, psychiatrists, that are in mental health professionals as a whole. We don't really, we have a diagram or a definition of what learning disability is, but we have yet to really put it into context in our so-called the handbook of mental health, which is the DSM, okay? And in that DSM is where we, as all psychologists, all mental health professionals, go in and find a definition and get a code so that we can talk about how we're going to develop a treatment plan. Well, you see, it's not in, learning disabilities are not yet in this particular manual, the DSM, and we're hoping that it will be in the future. Okay, and it may be, as a matter of fact, it may be in now. If one of the doctors that are coming on today might be able to elaborate on whether or not learning disability is indeed in the new DSM. But if not, what I'm trying to say, bottom line, is this, my friends, is that if you don't understand what a learning disability is, most of us categorize it under mental health. And, okay, the big umbrella, it is mental. Okay. It's mental, and it has to do with the brain. So, of course, you know, the person that's not familiar with the terms and how it separates learning disability from a mental illness may not be aware of what the differences are. And so when they start talking about how it's difficult for them to learn, and as Ms. C has brought out in her expose, so to speak, is that she has had panic attacks, lots of anxiety, lots of depression related to how she was going to explain that she didn't understand something something written on a piece of paper that was given to her by her supervisor. And also that she's having some trouble with understanding some things on the computer and her reading ability. So lots of things are going on with Ms. C, and the reason why I picked on her particular circumstances because I think that it kind of gives us an idea of how intense this problem is. She's a great model for us to look at. Let me just, real quickly, let me just explain the definition of learning disability without getting real technical with it. You know, I try my best not to do that, but I do want you to understand that it really truly is, they say it's not a physical disorder, but it is, because the brain is not sending the right signals for the use of our listening skills, our speaking skills, many times our speaking skills. I had a cousin that had a very, very tremendous speaking difficulty. He would hear it, but he could hear words, but he couldn't respond back. Reading, writing, reasoning or mathematical abilities. Usually a learning disability is discovered in an academic environment. Does that make sense? Okay, so when we look at it that way, hopefully we can understand that there is a difference between having a learning disability and having major depressive disorder, major depression disorder, or a schizophrenia, or anxiety, or any of those other diagnoses under the mental health umbrella. Okay. However, I do want you to be aware of one thing, that many people who have learning disabilities do indeed develop depression. Obviously, in trying, if they don't understand what it is and they have taboos in their background about discussing, you know, I don't read very well, I don't speak very well, you know, I don't hear you and process things very well, I don't want to tell anybody. And it's depending on the age that you're at, okay? And we have two actual professors. We have both of them doctorates in education. And they'll be coming on the show today. Dr. Kelmer Muhammad, Professor Kelmer, is ASU affiliate. Both of them, as a matter of fact, Dr. Beverly Polnitz is ASU affiliate and graduate in the doctoral program there. And both of them will have some a different, kind of like a different aspect, because Professor Kelmer looks at more the K through 12, and Dr. Polnitz is dealing more at the college level of learning disabilities. So they'll be joining us a little later to expound on what I'm talking about today. So without further ado, let me get into a little bit on why we find that the learning disabled adult does not seem to graduate with any type of, the anticipated graduation date is not usually the date that they graduate. Their completion time over a course of years is usually much longer than others. And so that does indicate to us that we need to do some type of intervention to help others to understand how to overcome or manage their learning disability and talk about it more openly so that they can get accommodations. Now, hold on. When I say talk about it, I don't mean that you go in, that we're encouraging anyone to go into their employer or to a teacher or a professor in their classroom or to anyone in administration and discuss the details of the learning disability. It is not necessary. And that is one of the things that I really, really school any of our students on, is that too much detail is unnecessary, because most people, unless they're in the field of mental health, are not going to understand what you're talking about when you talk about dyscalculia, which is a mathematical disability. They're not going to understand dysgraphia, or how you have trouble reading or writing things. Okay, so the issue that I'm trying to bring out here is to be very careful, tread gently, with sharing too much information. Okay, share it with the right persons. And the right persons to share it with, my friends, now listen carefully, because I want you to, especially those students out there that are in the psychology classes, okay, I want you to understand that you must be able to talk about your disability to the employer's human resource department, who has someone designated to deal with employees with disabilities. In the school setting, any school setting, even private schools that receive federal funding, are supposed to have someone that you can talk to about your disability. And those are the people that need your documentation and possibly more detail about what accommodations that you need. Now, real quickly, because I don't want to take too much time out talking a lot about this, but I just want to make sure that everyone is clear on the accommodations. Now, if you want more information, of course, we encourage you to contact WhiteAppleInstitute.org or give us a call at 480-471-8082 and talk to us to explain this further about the accommodations and anything else you want to know about learning disabilities. And I can't forget, okay, I can't forget to acknowledge that our producers, Malvina Sullivan and Kim Owens, have really been working very hard to generate interest in the show. We're reaching 75,000 listeners now, and we appreciate that. But the only reason why we can keep this show going is with your contribution. So I'm mentioning that again to you because if you go to whiteappleinstitute.org, there's a donation button on there, and you can actually donate whatever you can. The cost of a cup of coffee to a couple of hundred, whatever you want to do to help our show to continue to succeed and reach out to students all over the world, and especially here in the American education system that have any type of disability, learning, or mental or physical. Okay, let me talk about types of accommodations real quickly, and then we'll get our guest speakers in. The types of accommodations, because many students come to me and they say, well, I have a learning disability, but you know, I'm like, I'm not in a wheelchair, and so I don't know how to, what kind of accommodations. I had one young lady that we were working with for quite a while who had told me all of her life she was told she could not go to college because of her learning disability, and she had no idea of what was actually available to her, okay? And so I talked to her about, you know, the factor that she can get someone to read material to her. Okay, because she has a reading comprehension, a delay in her reading comprehension. She has some problems with taking notes, so a note taker can be provided. Okay, sometimes it's easier for students to sit a little closer in the classroom to the instructor, not only for hearing better, but also for a closer interaction, one-on-one interaction. So there's many, many things that can be done as an accommodation under what we call Americans with Disabilities Act to provide an opportunity for everyone to access education and the workforce and succeed. So I want you to put that message out there, okay? Put it out there that nothing has to stop your journey. Nothing has to stop your ability to accomplish your goals. You can do it. So I hope that if you know any veterans, especially veterans who are trying to go to school, I'm talking about, or anyone, any adult learner that is trying their best to go to school, and you know that there's something that's, you know, that they're having a challenge with. You've seen them go to school and drop out and go to school and drop out over and over again. Help them out by letting them know, first off, they can listen to this show, okay? Secondly, so share it with them. And secondly, that you encourage them to get some counseling or just, you know, some intake and assessment, and that's available by me in my private practice, okay? So just go ahead and please send that message out. Okay, let's move on to inviting Dr. Beverly Polnitz into our discussion this morning. Dr. Polnitz, are you there? Okay, one moment. Okay, Dr. Polnitz, are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It's so good to have you on the show. Your expertise is always welcome. You know, you have a lot of knowledge in working with students for many years. We've worked together at different colleges and different programs, and you're really appreciated. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and thank you for your service on the board of White Apple Institute, Dr. Polnitz.
It's certainly a pleasure to be here. I am with the community college system here in Phoenix, Arizona. And I just want to say that my experience in working with our students who have disabilities has been a eye-opener for myself and a number of other people that I work with, including our student population. Many people tend to feel that if you have a learning disability of some sort, that you're not as smart as others may be. And I have found firsthand that students who come to my class, and I teach some pretty tough classes, I feel. I teach accounting, all three levels, statistics, and statistics. And the students that come to me with learning disabilities, without question, every single one of them that have been in my classes have all, and I say all, and I have mm-hmm. done and gotten better grades than my students who do not have learning disabilities. They
wow.
have been leaders in the class. They
wow.
have been exemplary students.
Thank you.
Okay, and when I get very excited when I have a learning disability student who come to my class and they hand me their slip, and I'm like, I'm so happy to have you here because I know they're going to lead the class.
Gosh,
so,
you know, you got goosebumps coming up, God bumps coming up all over me with what you're saying right now, because if we could take that enthusiasm, that belief system that you have right there, and spread that through the to employers, to educators out there, and I really know what you're talking about because I've seen it myself. The dedication of students with learning disabilities, even those that are not even aware of the accommodations that are available, okay, and their determination when they have an instructor that cares. See, I know, and I hope the listeners can pick it up from your voice. You have a lot of empathy. You care. And you probably already modify your lessons accordingly. Am I right or wrong?
Absolutely. You're
okay.
Very right. I do not teach a lecture type of class. I'm more like the facilitator of the class, and we have a lot of team and group work that takes place. I allow the students to pretty much handle their own learning with my direction.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very interactive class. And I count on the students' feedback and interaction in that class to make the class successful. And that's
mm-hmm.
another part that the students, and I keep saying with learning disabilities, only because that's what the label is.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a disability, it's a good one because they're leading the class. Also, I want to say that at our institution, we have a area and a whole program that has been established for people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And the students in that area, some of them have already been offered jobs on campus. It's a program to take them from the classroom to on hands-on learning environment, and
mm-hmm.
the places that we've had the students placed on campus, they're offering them positions, and they haven't even finished the program yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
And
I just can't say enough to encourage the listeners to this show. If you have a disability and you're sitting there with people telling you you can't, get out there and do it. Yes, you can. I see it happening
mm-hmm.
every day. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you so much for that, because that's what we need. And if we could find more educators with that, and employers with that kind of attitude. And also, thank you for mentioning that program, because that's the federal funds are going out all over the United States for people to access programs where they are concurrently or at the same time working on college coursework and workforce skills, getting workforce skills, and so they get a vocational component along with an academic component so that they can truly succeed. So I appreciate you bringing that out. There are so many resources available out there. No one, especially in this day and age, has to sit at home and feel that they cannot succeed at college and in the workforce because of a learning disability or any form of anything that affects your mental or physical health, because there are so many laws now, legislation that has been fought for, where people want to help other people succeed. So thank you so much for sharing that. We're going to have some comments here.
I'd like to add one other thing. I failed to say, excuse me, where some of these you can get involved with some of these classes. It's Estrella Mountain Community College,
mm-hmm.
and the Southwest Skills Center is the is where the program is housed for the from the classroom to hands on to work. So I'm not putting a plug in for the community colleges, but those right. students out there and those who are looking to get into programs, that might be a good place to start. Thank you.
Thank you
for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. I'll tell you something. There's in the community college system, and I appreciate that President Obama is really pushing the importance of community colleges out there, because in other countries, unfortunately, there's not a community college system. We are the first. And in our system, we have that ability, and I'm so glad for that, that we can do the vocational and the academic component. And so I appreciate you bringing that out. Thank you very much. We have a couple of other people we want to bring on to discuss this morning. Stay tuned, because we are going to talk a little bit about how veterans with learning disabilities can succeed in the classroom and some of the issues that are facing them. So let me go ahead, and I think there's a call in here from California area. Hello. Good morning. This is Dr. Applewhite.
Good morning, Dr. Applewhite. This is Kim.
Hello. How are you?
Pretty good.
Thank you so much, Kim, our producer. What do you have to say this morning?
I'm just glad to hear Dr. Palmer's on the show this morning.
And she has some great things to say about, did you hear those kudos? If we could get all educators and employers to appreciate that, because let me tell you, I have a circumstance right now and that I would like to share, and that is that I know that, and I don't know if she's on the line right now, but if she is, maybe she can jump in. But there was a student who discussed the factor that she's sitting between two people on the job. Now, get this. She's in the middle and on her right is a person who has a physical disability and unable to do some things, but, you know, never really bothers her too much, you know, maybe, dropping something on the floor or whatever, and she has to pick it up. She's been dealing with her for a couple of years, and that's not a problem, she said. But lately, within the last few months, they hired another person who is consistently asking for help with understanding what's going on the computer. And so she keeps bothering our particular student, okay, we'll call her Miss V, if you will, and keeps bothering her about helping her to understand the job, okay? Now, our student is saying, wait a minute, who am I? Why am I getting so frustrated about all this, okay? And if that student is online, if that student comes on online to talk about that more, I'd really appreciate it. But if not, I just want to give you an idea that the circumstances of that are very, very common, that people, many employees and students, even in the classroom, are subjected to other people not being able to say, hey, I need to go talk to the instructor or get some accommodations here so that I can succeed in this classroom. They actually, unfortunately, begin to use other students to help them read and get through courses. And it's a touchy subject. What do you think about that? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you have employees yourself that you deal with that are dual diagnosed with mental illness and some learning disabilities, and this is your field. What do you do? What do you say to someone that is dealing with trying to help a fellow employee or a fellow student, and it's impairing their job? Kim, you have any ideas on that? Hello? Did I lose you? Oh, wait a minute. I think I did. I'm sorry. I did lose you. Okay, any ideas on that, Kim?
Well, you know, I deal with it every day. I just dealt with it yesterday, so I won't take up a lot of airtime. But what I've begun to tell the more advanced, I'll use that word, because a lot of times we think we're more advanced than someone that has a disability because we're not using patience to even take a moment to think about what is wrong with this person. The same moment we take when we're in traffic and we realize, oh, I better not run that red light. And if we could take a few minutes to take that much patience to think about not running a red light, you know, I tell my staff, take that moment to say, hey, I actually caught this person really does have this disability. You know it within yourself, but you just might want to pass it by and not think about it. So what I begin to tell my staff is just to stop for a minute. Don't pound on the one person. It becomes a pounding, that this pressure the person can't take, and then they refuse to say they have a disability. I actually had an employee who did have a disability for an entire year and never knew it. But I saw the signs of it. And then when I finally asked her, she finally told me. And I said, wow, you know, you could have gotten help if you would have just asked. So then
now,
when they don't ask...
Can you elaborate on the disability that person had? I mean,
she had an actual learning disability. She didn't have a physical disability. It was a learning disability when we begin to take tests. And
uh-huh.
when we begin to take tests, you know, I noticed it, but other employees gossiped about it. So that's the situation where we get with people now, our social media. We're getting a lot of gossiping versus wanting to really help a person. And take the time to use the word patience. So many of our listeners are even listening now, and as we, you know, continue to ask for donations, you know, remember we can't stay online if we don't get those donations. We're being as patient as we can and weekly making sure that we have Dr. Applewhite on the line so that she can talk to people and you can hear our show. But ultimately,
yes.
It's what do you take from the show when you leave? Because donations,
yes.
Without them, we won't stay on air. It's the same as with us. If we don't have clients, we don't stay in business, and therefore we cannot employ a person who has a disability. I will stop there.
Thank you. And one of the things that I think, and I've heard it many times before, is that with fellow employees and even with employers, okay, and there might be somebody on the switchboard that can elaborate a little bit more on this, that... that unfortunately many employers hold on to the stereotype that if someone has a learning disability, it usually means some kind of mental issue and maybe a lack of productivity on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the old way of thinking, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. We have a caller, 290. You're a 290 caller here?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, this is Jim Richardson.
Hello. Thank you for joining us this morning, fellow veteran.
Yes, I am. I'm a Vietnam veteran.
Uh-huh.
I've been on this earth about 69 years, so I have learned a lot about our society and the way they treat handicapped people, because I, too, am handicapped. Maybe I'm not supposed to say handicapped. Maybe I'm supposed to say disabled.
Mm-hmm.
But irregardless, the handicapped people in this country, unfortunately, are faced with a market now where it's an employer's market.
Uh-huh.
And many times they don't want to spend the time necessary to help and hire a disabled person.
Uh-huh.
And this is a great disadvantage in our society. But I have found that the most important thing about me is my attitude.
Uh-huh.
If I think I can, I can. If I think I can, I won't.
Okay.
And it's so important for all handicapped people or disabled people, either mentally or physically, to maintain a positive attitude. And
mm-hmm.
keep trying. You're never a loser until you just stop trying. And so many times, I can understand this. People get discouraged, and they've been trying, and they haven't maintained or haven't begun any success at all. So, you know, my advice, for what it's worth, is to keep trying, never give up, and keep a positive attitude.
And we appreciate
you. And you can overcome if you are willing to go the extra mile and do what is necessary to prove yourself beyond question.
Well, you know, that's a great attitude you have, and we all appreciate that, and that's what we try to promote at White Apple Institute and through the Student and Teacher radio show, is that type of attitude. But unfortunately, Jim, as you know, the masses of employers and educators out there don't unfortunately share that same enthusiasm because of the stereotypes that are there about people with learning disabilities and mental health issues. They don't want to hire them because they feel a lack of productivity. I mean, I don't know if you've experienced that yourself, but can you see what I'm saying?
Well, of course. I can understand the attitude of potential employers. You know, in today's society, all they're interested in is production and getting the job done. And many times, if they do have a handicapped or disabled person in their employee, it is to maintain a quota, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate that things are like that now. I hope that one day our society will realize what is going on and change their attitude about disabled people. Because we are just as much an American as anyone else, just as much a U.S. citizen as anyone else.
And
but we have a right.
Uh-huh, go ahead. Go ahead, hon.
Well, I just want to say we have a right to a good life if we seek gainful employment and we do what we're supposed to do and be a responsible citizen and a good employee. We shouldn't be judged by our disability. That's just a, you know, in some way I think every person is disabled in some mm-hmm. part of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Many have been able to overcome that particular problem that they've had or do have, and they just go on their merry way, so to speak, doing what they can to support their family and raise their family, and it's just, you know, sad that our society is like it is because we don't have to be that way.
Let me ask you a question, and this is up for anyone that's on the switchboard right now, and I'm just going to open up the line, and I'm glad that you know, everybody's aware that as I'm doing this, that please make sure you don't have a lot of background noise going on because I try to handle this as an open-air conversation. And but one of the things that you've been an employer, okay, and am I right? You've been a major employer, and you yourself have had to deal with what people say. Kim had mentioned a little bit about the gossip of other employees, you know, and employees trying to balance out when other employees need more help than they are willing to give. The general attitude of employers, because I see that there's been a change, but do you see that the average employer does not want to hire people with any type of disability? Do you think that that's still out there now?
In many, many cases, that is the way it is. When I had people working for me and I could detect or see or feel if they had any kind of handicap or disability, Kim, your vice speaker, hit it on the head. You have to have patience and tolerance and understanding. And that isn't the case in so many different situations where you have a disabled person applying for any type of job. The employer kind of looks, I think, in my own opinion, an employer, you know, it's an employer's market now. And they pick who they want to pick. And if you're not really up there, they're not even going to consider you. if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So,
it's
unfortunate
that
our society is in that state right now. But all of what I'm saying is just strictly my opinion. I don't base it on anything other than a long life of experience dealing with the public, dealing with people, and sort of taking the time to realize, before I jump and make a decision, I think about it, I pray about it, and I seek guidance from my higher power, and I try my best to do the right thing in all situations.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. I wish that we had more employers out there that had the same attitude that you do, and with what Dr. Polnitz shared, her attitude and enthusiasm about working with people with disabilities, especially learning disabilities, how they have actually become her most prized students and done an excellent job in the classroom and in the workforce. So there's been a change. I know there's been a change because I'm listening. All of us are listening to you as an employer from years ago, and the change that has happened with you, not necessarily because of your being disabled, but that you've seen the world change and you've seen the attitudes change. So we appreciate very much what you shared with us this morning, especially as a veteran, because we're dealing with a lot of veterans, and feel free to add in here, because I'll tell you, that's one of the things that I did when I was in the Army myself, is I was a trainer for students who were getting ready to get kicked out of the quartermaster school in cooking and supply courses because they could not read the instructions carefully. They could pass the test to get in because most of the tests are vocational based, you know what I mean? So they could get into the military, but reading and writing and applying things they had difficulties with. And it's so hard for people, especially when they're veterans, and any person that feels is trying to hold on to a high self-esteem, it's hard to admit that, hey, I don't get it. Don't you agree, Kim?
Well, it's hard to... Oh, sorry.
Thank you for letting me share my ideas and for letting me speak. But I want to pass on something that could be an invaluable tool to many, many people. It's something that I learned long ago, and I haven't forgot it. Today in our society, so many people use contempt prior to investigation. And that is a big problem in our society, throughout our society. When you prejudge before you investigate, you're robbing yourself of learning what you could have learned, because everybody can teach you something. Everybody can be a brother or sister, and if you use contempt prior to investigation, it's really going to be tough for you to really go down the road if you're seeking success.
Well, thank you. That's a wonderful, wonderful statement. Thank you so much for that, because that contempt prior to investigation, Jim, thank you, because that's what a lot of employers are doing, a lot of educators do, is they make this stereotype up before they already have it in their minds about, someone asking for accommodations in the classroom, someone to read for them or take notes for them or give them extra time for testing. Sometimes that's very misinterpreted, and so we appreciate you bringing that out. Anything else, Kim, that you'd like to add in?
Well, Apple, I agree with Jim, and I just would like to say the true educator, before you start to judge someone else, you'll know you're a true educator when the pupil you taught has shown you they've learned something. And that's what I find with the disabled population I love working with. They're always teaching me. They're always teaching me. So who is the true educator when you really think about it?
I'm learning
from them.
And you know what you said just now, that's the student to teacher concept. That's
absolutely.
It, in a nutshell, and like Jim was saying a minute ago, we deprive ourselves of learning from others when we use this contempt prior to investigation and we prejudge people. So we appreciate those comments that came in. Now, we have a couple of more callers. I want to try to get to them before we get into updating on some veterans news. And we have some, I think this caller's from Ohio. I'm not sure. Okay, hello. This is Dr. Applewhite. 216? Okay, let's see. Okay, I'm not sure if 216 is there. Ready to discuss anything? Okay, just come on in when you when you're comfortable. I'll leave the line open. There's a caller here, a 226. Anything that you need to say, sir or madam? This is Dr. Applewhite. Okay. All right. Going down the line here, 200. A 200
Maria.
Number. Hello. How are you? I'm trying to get everybody
you.
On. You know, it's hard to get everybody on the switchboard, but, you know, I do my best. Okay? And, you know, I'm looking at some of the chat that's coming in, too, and it's wonderful that people are sending in kudos. I want to hear some examples of how people have used, have overcome and managed their learning disabilities and get some positive, more positive stuff in here. Do you have anything, caller, that you'd like to share? Is that Maria? Do you have anything that you'd like to share about learning disabilities and... Have you been helped yourself, or do you know someone that has been discriminated against?
No, I'm listening to them, and whatever they say is beautiful. What they have to say, and I appreciate what they have to say.
Okay, try that again.
I said I'm very happy for what I hear the other people saying. It's very uplifting what they have said. The lady and the German that spoke, they have some good things to say. I appreciate that.
Now, have you, you know, and comfortably, I would like you to express. Are you yourself? Have you had to deal with going to school with any type of learning disability, or do you know someone that you'd like to discuss how they have managed that?
Well, you know that I have cerebral palsy. I have all my life learning disabilities, and I kind of agree with the gentleman that spoke about, you know, that sometimes people look at us and they don't research, they don't do the research about, like, okay, this is how I see it. Like, in my life, I had never really know what I'm capable to do, for real. And because of, you know, the money of society, or because they don't have, I guess, the time to deal with people like us. Maybe, you know, maybe they, you know, people, they're missing out. Maybe they, like, I put it this way. If they will try all of the handicapped people and try to see what we all are capable to do, maybe we will be able to do something for society. But because they didn't try us, they don't know what we can do and how we can contribute to society.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And that's very encouraging. And, you know, we appreciate the fact that you're willing to share the cerebral palsy and many, many other people out there with cerebral palsy or any kind of, that's a developmental disability. That means that someone was born with some type of dis in their ability to move and sometimes to speak as quickly, respond as quickly or as clearly as others. And many times we find that people become very impatient, as Kim and Jim were bringing out, that there's an impatience factor, and that if we learn more patience and try not to judge people before we look at what valuable gifts that we can learn from them, we really put ourselves at a disadvantage. So thank you so much for sharing, Maria. Anyone, is that 216 number. Do I have that ready? Hello? This is Dr. Alpha.
Yes, I'm here. And from what I'm hearing, I'm not so familiar with the show, but from what I'm hearing, like, it's not reality what you guys are speaking. Like, everybody is impatient and considerate as you guys all appear to be.
You're trying to get ready.
Like, in the real world, some people don't want to deal with that. Like, why should I have to do my job and have to do somebody else's job if they're incompetent?
Okay. Ma'am, I love what you're saying. If you feel like you want to give your name, that's fine. What I'd like to know, have you dealt with something like that yourself? Where you've had to help other people?
Yes, on a job. And it's like, why do I have to do my job and yours? Like, how did you get this position if you can't complete the work? Why are you always constantly coming to me for assistance?
I got
you.
Wow. That's an awesome comment.
Okay.
Maybe if you learn some compassion, that would be nice.
Well, everybody doesn't have that. Like, why do I have to be compassionate for the next person? What about me?
Because you're a human being, that's why. Because one day you will need somebody to be compassionate for you, so you need to learn to be compassionate with all the people.
How do you know
and
that, though?
That's a beautiful way to believe, and we certainly, that's what this show is about helping people to become more compassionate and patient. But I think what the lady from, is it Ohio? Is your number in Ohio, ma'am?
Yes, I'm Ohio, in Columbus.
Okay.
Columbus.
Okay. So what I'm trying to ask you is that, and I appreciate your comment, because what you're doing is you're bringing a real-world situation, and there are people out there that, when they're doing their job, they don't want to. I brought out an example earlier of one of our students who said she's overwhelmed by the fact that somebody's sitting next to her in the computer in the call center and constantly asking her to help her, so she feels very uncomfortable doing her job. So what you're saying is valid. Okay, what do you do? I hope you're not going to quit, or I hope you didn't quit whatever position you were in.
Well, no, like, I'm in telemarketing, and I mean, if you can't do your position, you're hindering me from doing mine, because then I have to stop what I'm doing to assist you. Then that's not fair to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Okay, here's what I would like to suggest. Whenever that is happening on the job, and I know that does come across my desk a lot, that you encourage that person to discuss their situation with the supervisor, because that's about all that you can do. Because if you let it impact your job, then your production level goes down, and I think that, I believe it was Jim who brought out that this is an employer's market. And the employer wants to see productivity. And anytime the employer doesn't see that people are going to produce, they are going to, unfortunately, eliminate that position. So I think that you should bring it to the attention of your supervisors if you feel courageous enough to do that, or at least bring it to that person's attention that they need to talk about what they need in order to produce on the job, because it is interrupting your performance. Okay? Does that help a little bit?
I mean, I guess so. I'm not really sure, because why should I have to even go through all of those channels?
Mm-hmm.
They should have screened this person better in a hiring process. Like I said, how did they get this job if they can't do the task that's expected of them?
So this is Kim. Can I make a comment to address her quickly?
Please.
Because I know exactly how she feels, because I've gone through this with employees that currently work with me now, and that's exactly what they'll come to me and say. You know, how do I help this person? But what it really naturally stems from is the screening process. It is an employer's market. In America, they want to see speed now. Everything fast. And we really need to slow down. And Apple, this opens the door for another conversation, another show for us, because we want the listeners to come on and speak. So you will help us so we can help you, because now we're looking at White Alpha Institute trainings that we're going to have to do with employers so you don't feel afraid.
No one wants to say they're afraid because you have bills on the line, you have your house, you have your job. People are afraid to even talk to the managers or the bosses.
Oh,
they're afraid.
Right.
So this opens the door for us to have a training with her boss in Ohio. We would love to fly there and come to her boss, because then employees are not afraid to say something. Right now we're in a spirit of fear in this country, and people are afraid to say anything. So they'd rather social media as fast as they can and then hide. And that's what we don't want people to do, because now you're creating another disability just for yourself. You're hiding.
Wow. And I got to stop here for just a moment and really and reiterate something that we say a lot. And if you go to the WhiteAppleInstitute.org website, you will see that what our challenge is to change the attitude of people to look at this and the ability as differently abled or different abilities. Look at your different abilities instead of always looking at what you're dis at or what you're lack of in your ability. And so we promote that kind of attitude, and if we can do that, and we have many, many success stories of people with disabilities, physical, learning, mental, whatever, that have succeeded and done wonderful jobs, and that's what we want to hear. We want to hear about those so that the lady from Ohio can feel a little bit more comfortable, and people like her, that there is a tremendous movement of people that do ask for accommodations on the job. And by the way, let me say this too. For, you know, there's probably people that are going to listen to this and say, well, okay, well, you said all that, that's really nice, but what does that lady do from Ohio? What does she really do with her employer? Now, what does that employee get, all right? Is that employee, when that employee goes forward and says, hey, I really do have something is not correct with my learning, and when I was in school, I was diagnosed with learning disability, and I need an accommodation. That employee has developed some fear in doing that because he doesn't know what's going to happen at the other end. And also, they're not clear on what accommodations they need. So that is a real problem with many of our students, many of our employees out there. They really don't understand what is available to them. So we encourage you to contact the WhiteAppleInstitute.org and to ask for a referral to one of our rehabilitation counselors to discuss this even more. So because there are ways that the computer can be adjusted, just as well as the chair that you sit in to accommodate a backache, we can also do things with people who have learning disabilities to equal the production field so that they produce at the same level or even above other employees. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense to everybody, that there are accommodations available. Any further comments? We've got about 3 minutes left, and I do want to say something about our veterans out there. Any comments? Okay, let me just say this then. There's a lot of ways that we can help our veterans to deal with the changes that are going on when they leave active duty, and they are extremely strong, physically strong individuals, usually with a high self-esteem. They have that rifle in their hand or whatever they're doing when they're in the military, whether it's Navy or Army or whatever, and they feel good about themselves. And then to come out and try to adjust to the civilian life and a civilian school environment and work environment is usually very challenging for them, especially if there's anything that's going on with a learning disability or... So... We encourage you, if you know a veteran.